You're listening to TalkTainmentRadio.com.
The views and opinions expressed are those of the host and guest and not necessarily those of TalkTainmentRadio.com, the management, the staff, or K&E World Network, LLC.
Better believe it, get on your knees and pray hard, then pray hard, and never look back. Once the world forgave you, then do right, then do good. And it's so hard to do right when you do wrong, when it turn right, but you turn all the way.
Hensha, and welcome. We're glad you're here for a conversation with Dawn Karima. Energetic, exciting, entertaining, and informative.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Oh, I'm glad you're here. I'm glad I'm here. And I'm especially glad our guest is here today. My name is Dr. Dawn Karima, and I welcome you to Conversations with Dawn Karima. And I welcome our guest. Will you please introduce yourself to us?
Yes, twin. Donnie Giotte. Ronawa gave up in a hand, won't we? Donnie is my name. A beaver in, I am a current in the swamp is my traditional name. They got boots, Nagu and Guinness, Garurek, Ganis, Noagarakwe. I come from the Drowning Creek Tuscarora Longhouse. Maxton, Maknanet. Maxton is where I'm from. So, if that clarifies who I am, thank you for having me here in Yahweh. Wakatanate, Ganagitre. I'm glad to be here.
Mado, I'm so thankful you are here. I always love when I get to showcase and spotlight my kinfolks and friends because y'all are always doing such wonderful things. This is wonderful. I would love to ask, though, could you tell us about your name? I believe names are such a powerful part of our indigenous cultures, and it's always fascinating to me if someone will share with us the story behind their name or the meaning behind their name.
Absolutely. So after coming into the Tuscarora Nation Longhouse at Maxton Drowning Creek, eventually, you know, you earn your name through your community, through your longhouse. And so I am part of Chutnagek Distisita, so beaver clan. And so, you know, the Tuscarora have always been a swamp people. We've always lived around the estuaries and the riverine ecosystems of Virginia, North Carolina, some parts of South Carolina. And the beaver is one of those families that was always around. We learn from the beaver in the environment. We, you know, we take on those characteristics that we see the beaver and these other animals in our environment, our animal kin, those natural characteristics. And so this current in the swamp is a characteristics of the beaver continuing to work, continuing to take on its daily tasks. Sort of, you know, if I must, keeping things going, you know, if there's a swamp there and, you know, it's sort of stifled, you don't see anything moving. And so every now and again, we'll see that ripple through the water, you know, and it gets to moving a bit. And we'll see the tail and the head of that beaver striking across the water. Mm. So we know he's at work. And so a lot of my name in the traditional longhouse perspective is about doing that work, continuing on this work, preserving what has already been done in the ecosystem for our families, for our environment. Mm-hmm. And so I would like to think that the name that I was given in the longhouse by my people, he is a current in the swamp, heavily, you know, very, very intimately talks about this continued work, this continued energy. You know, while things are stagnant, you know, there's always a responsibility, a duty, an obligation to do this work, no matter how tired we get, no matter how frustrated we get. No matter what type of, you know, conflict and catastrophe and chaos we can get ourselves into, you know, eventually we have to reset. You know, we have to take a break. But, you know, the vital point in that name is to continue moving, to continue stirring the work, to continue, you know, getting this, you know, perspective of whatever these issues are in the minds of the people. And so I've carried this name to try and continue to honor that message of the work that everyone else has done before my time, those who live still, you know, during my time, and absolutely for those who come after my time, you know, is to continue to stir that water, continue to make sure the swamp is moving, you know, because we can get stagnant, we can get forgetful, we can miss things when we're not taking enough time to appreciate or investigate or, you know, give ourselves time to make a decision, you know. And so without having all the details, you know, it's sometimes hard to make decisions. And so part of my usual, you know, wanting to do this work is to make people aware. And so stirring that pot, keeping that swamp moving when things get stagnant is a big, big part of the fundamentals of my name.
Oh, how wonderful. Thank you for sharing that with us. That is just beyond beautiful. I loved hearing about that. And I love the fact that that's beautiful. I love that you were willing to share that with us. You know, we reach 160 countries, all 50 states of the United States, all the provinces of Canada, and we would love it if you would help maybe some of our friends who listen that aren't real familiar with the Tuscarora Nation. You know, my home, of course, is the Quala boundary, so we love the Tuscaroras of North Carolina.
Right.
But maybe other folks don't know, and they don't have a familiarity with your nation. So what do you want the world to know about your nation?
Absolutely. Thank you, you know, Nyawe, for asking that. We don't always get this, you know, fundamental underlying, you know, identity. You know, we want people to know who we are. And so I thank you for asking that. You know, people get confused anytime they hear Tuscarora. You know, where are we talking about? Are we talking about Canada and the Grand River? Are we talking about New York and Lewiston? Or are we talking about North Carolina? And so, you know, we Tuscarora Nation of North Carolina are composed of the traditional longhouses that remain. The ancestors that survived Indian removal for Tuscaroras in the mid-1700s to the mid-1800s. So there's about 100 years or so period between the French and Indian War to the Civil War, where Indian removal for Tuscaroras was a prominent thing. You know, we hear 1830s and we think Indian removal was just a 10-year period, but essentially it depends on the nation's experience. And for Tuscaroras, we dealt with Indian removal much earlier. You know, the Tuscarora Wars in 1711 to 15 was part of that earlier forceful conflict between us and the settlers, the English settlers, that forced Tuscaroras away. And so, you know, it's always been this controversial narrative or situation where folks don't believe that Tuscaroras remained in the state, that all Tuscaroras have agreed to a non-treaty name, that all Tuscaroras assimilated into modern culture and have no distinct Tuscarora heritage or culture or historical sensibility about their identity, and those things could just be further from the truth. So in reality, we are the Tuscarora descendants of those who fought, eventually remained neutral, and had a relationship with the state government and Great Britain. So before the United States was created, the colonies of both North Carolina and Virginia established treaties with our ancestors. And so there were original agreements on establishing what our commitment were to the settlers and what their obligations to our people were. And through the centuries, there have been many laws written to avoid their obligations to those original agreements. And so the biggest controversy about the Tuscarora Nation of North Carolina is that, you know, we're being told as a people, as a sovereign people with a culture, a language, We have lands all across this state that technically still belong to us that have never been ceded or never been sold, never been compensated for, been taken, illegally occupied. And there's state laws that still have this impediment on Tuscarora identity. And it has this persuasion over legislators. I mean, this is for generations. This is, again, since the last quarter of the 1700s. So 1778. The state passes a law called Quieting the Claims of the Tuscaroras and Those Under Them. And this was about, you know, manipulating a certain set of Tuscaroras who were moved to New York to sell some land from the reservation. And they were very unique, the legislators in this clause. They added to it in 1778 that if the Tuscarora were removed or went extinct, this extinct language, that if we went extinct, that the land would revert to the state. And in 1916, when those land leases were over after 150 years, it reverted back to the state. And so the state has played this very long game of, you know, catch and release the Tuscarora. But when they catch the Tuscarora, they want to change the identity of the Tuscarora. They want to manipulate, assimilate, coerce the Tuscarora to provide their free, prior, and informed consent to a non-treaty Tuscarora identity, or to a non-Tuscarora identity. And this has been part of that larger complication, that complex system of narratives, where people sort of have a preconceived bias. They have these stereotypical notions of Tuscarora is not Tuscarora unless it's in New York. Tuscarora is not Tuscarora unless it's adopted into the Haudenosaunee Confederacy in New York with the now Six Nations. You know, we're not Tuscarora unless we're part of what's now the Lumbee Tribe, because Congress has, and the state through many generations, has again coerced, assimilated Tuscaroras and other Native Americans who would be our relatives and allies into these modern identities that are devoid of cultural inalienable treaty and aboriginal rights and claims. And so the Tuscarora here, the biggest thing that I can say is that our Tuscarora people that make up the longhouses in Robeson County were verified heavily by documentation that the state federal government knows that we're Tuscarora, has known that we lived, preserved, survived this Indian removal crisis through many different, you know, eras and phases of policy. And that so much so that they had to create indoctrinating policies of assimilation programming to avoid these original agreements and responsibilities. So the Tuscarora and Robeson County are treaty-bearing Tuscarora descendants, which give us the right to sovereignty, the right to self-governance, the right to repatriate our ancestral remains and aboriginal land claims. And so throughout history, throughout the Tuscarora experience, especially those who still survive in Robeson County, North Carolina, Cumberland County, North Carolina, we're ostracized, we're marginalized, we're oppressed, we're politically repressed and more or less attacked for being who our ancestors were and for attempting to hold accountable these legislators for their obligations to honor those original agreements. You know, it's a really big crux because people don't see this long backdoor issue of these treaties and the international rights and how binding these agreements are. You know, they see it as a scrap of paper. They see it as a footnote in history. They see it as the Indians agreeing to give up their land to stay into a what's supposed to be a more civilized, you know, system of approach. When the Tuscarora, as North Carolina colonial historians and famous persons put down on their paperwork, you know, in their records, that the Tuscarora were civilized, the Tuscarora were powerful, that we had a military, that we were diplomatic, that we were peaceful people despite having these issues with the settlers and having differences in our philosophy governing lifeways and, you know, just our well-being, the way of the land, and our ways of being. And so, you know, that's a lot that I would just like to uncase, you know, unpack for people that want to know more about the Tuscarora. You know, we have a lot on our history page, on our tribal history page. It's very historically accurate. It's in-depth. It's consecutive, block by block. You don't really miss anything in the timeline. So these are things that I would tell somebody who's learning Tuscarora for the first time, never heard of the Tuscarora Nation in North Carolina, never been to one of our longhouses, our powwows, our political movements or affairs. You know, our people have been active for a very long time in attempting to continue to assert ourselves, our identity, and hold the powers that be accountable for their desecration of this original relationship. You know, lawmakers act like essentially that the Tuscarora are not recognized, that the treaties and the state books and the federal books are non-binding, that these agreements have no whatsoever, you know, holding to them in their way. You know, the laws itself in the books that they have would state generally, you know, if you would think about it, the Tuscarora either remove or go extinct, and we now have their land. If the Tuscarora are breathing and alive, and you know that they've documented in your state is resisting your colonial jurisdiction and your authority, and also maintained their own land bases, kept their own ways of living, despite your approach to assimilate them, despite your approach to remove them by policy, despite your approach to eradicate our people by cultural assimilation, by ethnocide, by coercion to take on something for a benefit, like perhaps what the Lumbee tribe is doing today. You know, they don't see those things. They don't hear those things. And it's so popularized, it's so dramatized on, you know, this thing of being Lumbee and this thing of ostracizing, of, you know, making a criminal of the Tuscarora for politically asserting themselves. People don't see that because that's generations of history ago. You know, they're stuck in what they see right now. And so the stirring of that small, you know, is also bridging back the knowledge of those other historical eras where you're missing this context, you're missing these relationships that clearly show the Tuscarora as a sovereign nation, show the Tuscarora as treaty holding, show the Tuscarora as being separate and independent from state governance. And today we don't have that, and people don't understand that because of the way that the state lawmakers have set up modern tribal recognition and have eroded this past faith and trust in these original agreements per the treaties.
There's so much to learn, it sounds like, and that's why I'm really excited about the fact that y'all have a website. Can you tell us about that so folks can learn more about you?
Yes, absolutely. So our relative, Runa Kwachin, Dwayne Brayboy from Prospect Longhouse, he is the digital web manager who maintains the website, updates it. It is very much in tune with our language, our cultural cosmology and philosophy, and the ways that we think, the way that we live, the way our relationship with our ancestral lands, with the time that we keep. So he does a really good job at, you know, continuing to represent our current events, our presence in the media, our collaborations with our allies, whether that be people like what is now the Wake County Public Libraries that we're so grateful for, the Friends of the Mountain Sea Trail, the folks now with the Mordecai Historic Park in Raleigh and the people of Raleigh. And so there's been a lot to happen that has provided us this ability to showcase and highlight and share our people's endeavors, their triumphs, their victories, and oftentimes their challenges and, you know, the struggles that they face, the adversity that we continue to are blocked by in our road to assert ourselves and to reaffirm this relationship with the state and hold them accountable. So when we have powwows, you know, we get photos of that. Sometimes after ceremony, whether it's, you know, after we set strawberry, we're having, you know, some photographs at Longhouse. When we're doing cultural events and gatherings and culture class, dancing and singing, when we're teaching our youth, when we're gathering for fundraisers, when we're honoring our elders and feeding our folks, when we're supporting our allies, you know, for instance, like the struggle in Palestine, you know, these are things that we'd like to educate folks on, that, you know, we have a connection regardless of not, you know, ever meeting, you know, in Palestine with their people or their leadership, that we can support, you know, people who are being colonized, people who are being illegally placed under duress, who are being forced to assimilate, you know, forced removal. All these things are very inherent to our experience, Tuscarora, as the original inhabitants of this great state of North Carolina, Virginia, South Carolina, the United States. And so to be able to share is very much worthwhile, to be able to present, show our authentic history, show our connection with the actual land here in North Carolina, where we are today, where we have been, you know, talking about our migration. You know, everybody knows about the migration from Indian Woods to New York with our northern relatives, right? But nobody really knows about the Tuscarora staking out and hiding in Robeson County because of the complications today in the original narrative and honoring true history for what it is at that time in that era. And so, you know, it's very crucial that we reach, you know, our allies in the public media, in our hometowns, in the counties that we've always had a home and land in, our state representatives, no matter where they're at. You know, there's this overlying assumption that only those representatives in your county are your representatives, right? You know, those who are taxing you and writing bills for you. But in actuality, you know, if there's a treaty between my people and your people, then everybody in your state, your citizens, your representatives, your judges, your educators, everyone there then is held responsible from that time to the future for, to uphold these agreements and these, you know, accountable for this relationship. And so we oftentimes are dealt this bad hand that, well, you know, we can't help you or we can't listen to that or we can't support that, you know, as a representative that's outside your district because you're not our constituent. But in actuality, we are your constituent. You know, we're all of those things for you, but, you know, if people aren't learning about the treaties, if people aren't learning about all these issues, then they're not going to understand that technically they do have a responsibility and that they should be held accountable, that they do have an obligation to honor those relationships despite them not being in our area, because there's a lot of land that our family and our ancestors lived on that we were illegally forced away from, you know, that we had no choice. You know, you would be killed or you could stand there and be subsumed by the colonial settlement. So it's not that our people have always had a choice. It's sometimes picking the lesser of two evils.
Yes. Wow. Yep. Well, see, learning all of this just makes me more excited about your upcoming events, decolonizing the Tuscarora experience. You know, our beloved Dwayne Brayboy is a board member for our nonprofit, and so anything that he does, of course, we are claiming and taking part in making a success. So this program is wonderful, and it has so many parts of the series that will teach us so many great things and help us to understand so much about your nation, your culture, your history, but also your present. So can you just tell us a little bit about this upcoming event, maybe the way to sign up or what we can do in order to attend?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you, Nyawe, for asking. We, at the Decolonizing the Tuscarora Experience, it is a collaboration between I and Runa Kwache, and we were asked to do this on behalf of the Wake County Public Libraries after doing a lecture or two on the town of Knightdale and city of Raleigh, county of Wake, with their public libraries at Knightdale and also at the Mordecai Historic Park. And so they learned more about the Tuscarora, our land claims, our treaty rights, indigenous rights. They learned a ton about the migrations and about these different laws and situations with the Tuscarora Wars that impacted how we got here today. And so I believe the first one is April the 28th, and they will be from 6:30 to 8 o'clock. They will be staged about 2 weeks apart. They're all virtual, and they're hosted through a platform with the Wake County Public Libraries. I believe on their website, which is connected to the Wake County government, that you can sign up digitally online with your email to register. And I believe there's not a real big catch. So I believe they have a lot of freedom to add a lot of people from a lot of different places. And so we're told they can hold up to, I think, 20,000 viewers
at
a time, possibly, potentially. So we're hoping that there is a lot of participation. We were told after they began their advertising promotions on the website, on their website, that in just 2 days there were over 100 signers to participate, interested in participating. So we are excited to move forward. We can absolutely share that with you. If Dwayne hasn't already, as far as the link, so that anyone who wants to view the website and sign up has the opportunity to do so. And I think they'll probably have it set up if they don't have it already. I think they, sorry, I'm not at work. But I believe that all four of them are already set up online.
They are.
And you
they
can
are.
Sign up. Right. So we're glad. They've done a really good job at advertising. They've done a really good job at getting it together. And we're in the final phases right now of just wrapping up our presentation to have an advance and set up to get through. We're really glad that it's virtual. When we were doing these in-person presentations, we can only have so many people in there at a time. And, you know, people have to drive. They have to take time out of their schedules. Mm-hmm. And so they were really, you know, they were really come through very, very much so for us. And we're very thankful that they were able to do a virtual this time. So it's Rena Clanche, you know, he lives across the state in Hickory, you know, rooftops. And, you know, we live here. And so that's in the middle of the state. And so it's like we all, both of us, are making a huge commitment to drive, which we don't mind doing. And those things to reach people, of course, and to network and all those things. And so to have it be virtual, to have, you know, four set up about 2 weeks after the other, and it's a four-part series, so we're going to be able to really break down, you know, these different parts, and we're going to be able to bring more to the table than what I produced and what Rena Clanche was able to share at the in-person lectures. So, like, recently we were asked to do a land acknowledgement at the 55th annual convention for the North Carolina Association of Educators, and that was really big for us. It was really big for us. We were really grateful, considering we were able to talk about our, you know, connection to the ancestral land there in the Detroit, which was one of our villages in Raleigh. And so, you know, to be able to share that and have that knowledge at hand in our language with the history intact, to be able to share with people, you know, it's really good to have that. You know, they're getting a genuine approach. They're getting it from the source. You know, they're not getting it from anybody outside the community. They're getting it from people who are enrolled with our people that are connected to the communities, that are fighting basically essentially on the front lines to erase and eradicate this longstanding, centuries old narrative that the Tuscarora are extinct, that the Tuscarora are only in New York. So we're going through, you know, bit by bit, very intimately. You know, of course, it's our presentation all those times, but it'll be a co-op, you know, half the time by Rena Clanche, half the time by me. And we're going to, you know, lay things out very delicately for everybody that wants to attend. You know, so we're not sharing all of our big family secrets and all these different things necessarily. So our ceremonial things, you know, or sharing any of those things, but we're absolutely giving you the things that we've discussed just in greater detail, sharing bits of evidence and all those different things, really giving people an inside scoop on the Tuscarora Nation. So, you know, what you're getting on the website will basically be a breathing, living presentation, you know, at that point throughout these four presentations.
That's wonderful.
We're looking forward to it.
We are, too. I mean, we have been promoting it through our nonprofit. We signed up right away. We're really excited about this. And
very good.
We're going to talk much
more.
Oh, we're going to talk about it much more. But as we go, we have to pay the bills with some commercials, and then we'll come back and talk about this much more. But I want everyone to take this moment to register. Wake, W-A-K-E dot gov, G-O-V slash libraries. That's wake.gov/libraries, and you'll get a Zoom link. It's free. I mean, think about it. Homeschooling families, if you need a history, social studies, culture component, elective, or a lesson, here's a great opportunity. If you're a student, if you're a teacher, these are great opportunities for you to learn and also to have your students and learners find out more about this great nation. And then for all of us, this is a wonderful opportunity to learn, you know, and the fact that it's virtual, I'm just so thankful. That means all of us can be part of this and join in. So while we pay the bills with these commercials, please go to wake.gov, W-A-K-E.gov, G-O-V, /libraries, and sign up. And when we come back, we'll talk about this much, much more. We'll be right back.
TalkTainmentRadio.com podcast is another way to go for those of you that's on the go. You can now get your favorite programs on most new cell phone technology. Let us work like a DVR and enjoy our podcasts for those shows you can't fit in your busy schedule. The Road to Featured Podcast. Type in TalkTainmentRadio.com. Go to homepage. Scroll down to Featured Podcast. Click on Play or click on Subscribe for more programs. or you have the option to download. Podcast is the way to go for you busy folks. The world's greatest radio. TalkTainmentRadio.com. Another reason to come, another reason to stay. Radio, the way it should be heard.
We are strong, and we'll get through this together. But these are stressful times. Reach out to someone, connect with your friends, and know that you are not alone. Visit WeAreBroadcasters.com/hope. Furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Presenting great moments in the history of 1-800-FED-INFO. For years, Americans have turned to 1-800-FED-INFO for government information. Make your own great moment. Call 1-800-FED-INFO. It's government made easy.
Peace Corps. Life is calling. How far will you go? To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or visit peacecorps.gov.
Such a brilliant conversation. Oh, I'm enjoying it so much and learning so much from it. I'll ask our guest, would you please introduce yourself to us once more?
Yes. Chuan Donigiase, Rawagavik Senehemwawe, Degagut Negute, Gine, Skarurek, Ganishef, Nwagarakwe. Donnie, I am called. He is a current in the swamp, is my traditional Tuscarora name. I am from the Drowning Creek Tuscarora Longhouse.
I'm really glad you're here. Thank you so much for joining us today. Mado.
Nyawe. And yeah.
Well, I'm excited for decolonizing the Tuscarora experience, but I feel like I should ask you to define what you think decolonizing means.
Decolonizing is the process of redeveloping the mind of our people in an ancestral mindset perspective. You know, some people want to say it's stepping back in time and doing everything our ancestors did. And we know in reality that, you know, that can be just about impossible today with technology and modern things that help you, you know, do things faster and more effectively and efficient. You know, it's sort of like the experience that our ancestors first felt upon European colonial trade goods. You know, we're taking furs and we're taking wooden spoons and we're taking other items that we can trade and middleman with our neighbors. And then we're selling that, you know, and transferring that over for better knives and guns and powder and rum and kettles and other items that are replacing our ceramics that they're taking sometimes days to make, you know, and break easily and wear out over time much faster than iron. You know, these things that we didn't necessarily have or cultivate or manufacture, you know, became, you know, very, very much, you know, priceless commodities. And so it's not necessarily just about going back in time and just replacing what is considered colonial. It is more or less that idea of going back and replacing that mindset, right? How our ancestors thought, our original life ways, the cosmology, our mythic narratives, our stories of migrations throughout time across this great continent of Turtle Island. You know, all these things that make a Tuscarora, our language, our social, you know, relationships with each other and roles and responsibilities, all those things have been replaced with the colonial, you know, what is now considered, you know, accepted Americanized behavior. And so those things are not traditional to our people's mindset, that living in now what they, you know, single family household where there's just mom, dad, the kids, you know, where there's no real support next door, you know, where there's not a shared resources, make sure everybody gets by collectively, communally, like the longhouse philosophies and structures we traditionally lived in, where we rotated off the land so many generations at a time. There was sustainability with the ecosystems, and there was sustainability with the carrying capacity of all of our animal relatives and ourselves. So those ways that we lived traditionally, you know, we don't do those things anymore. And so now we're living in mobile homes. We're living in brick homes that are permanent, that are not going anywhere. And we're flattening forests and we're draining creeks and we're doing all these things that are considered progressive. But in actuality, they're harming not only the original structure of the environment and the ecosystem and those food webs of creation, but they're also harming our ability to think in the way that our ancestors thought. And so it breaks down this understanding, not only of creation and our responsibilities to uphold, you know, and honor the, all life's ability to live, to procreate, to have access to clean water, to clean food and soil, and trees to live in, all these things that they need too. You know, we don't have those conversations anymore, you know, and there's a lot of environmental places and agencies and laws in place that are supposed to protect these things for Native people, Indigenous people, and for the environment. And those things are lost when our minds are being broken. Our minds are completely modernized and colonized, and we can no longer go back two generations and see what our old folks were thinking and what they were doing. You know, so for instance, when I look at the genealogy of my family and I see how they lived, right? You know, they didn't have access to modern medicine. They didn't have access to doctors because they were Native Tuscarora people that were considered poor in most sensibilities and uneducated by what the greater society would say as the white supremacists controlled everything. And then at the same time, if they did have money and access to resources, that doctor could discriminate against them because they're not white and they're not in a specific neighborhood. And so what I'm getting to say in all of this is our people lived off the land. They grew their own crops in the gardens and in the forest and all these different things. They had hog killings where their communities and family members came together and drained that fat and used it for lard and ate, you know, and spreaded the meat around for everybody to have some of it. And they traded and bartered. These are things that our families are still doing that are decolonizing the modern ways and practices. It's going back to those roots of making sure we can all take care of each other, even if this modern system falls apart, right? Because we were doing something before it was invented and done, such as the colonial Columbian exchange, right? We were living without kettles, we were living without guns and ammunition, we were living without rum, we were living without conflict with Europeans, you know, with all these things. And so decolonizing is about returning to a practice of the mind to be able to reinstitute these original practices, these original agreements, right? So we can't see the treaties. We can't see the treaties today, you know, and half of our people don't see the treaties. And these are why we talk about these things and we're continuing to be active, right? A current in that swamp will continue to be active. Get these people to understand, our relatives, our neighbors, these politicians, we understand that there were these original agreements. And if we continue to progress into the future and we don't step back in time and decolonize our minds, think and see that true history, the full scope of that history, we're missing a lot. And we're not just missing the identity in full. We're not just missing the relationship of being a treaty nation here that is sovereign and independent, that has been undermined, that has been, ostracized and all these different things by state government. Is that, yes, you know, through decolonizing, we can find the answers to these things. We can reinvigorate, we can revitalize, we can reintroduce these older mythologies and practices and principles that have sustained our people well before colonization. And so that, to me, is what decolonizing the Tuscarora experience is all about and what that word truly means. It's really sort of hard to define for some people. And it is very fluid because it's not fixed in time. You know, there's different layers to decolonizing. Like for instance, Runa Kwakye teaches us all the time, you know, using Tuscarora words, using skarur, because the more we use it, the more we hear it, the more we're wanting to replace it, you know, replace the English with our traditional tongue when we're hearing it. And our people speak a broken form of English, and we know that that's from resistance of wanting to speak our own language, but being forced to speak something else and convert and having our minds change with that. So I think inherently when we start speaking our language as somebody who's a language learner, we understand quite frequently you get that exposure, that feeling manifest inside your body, what we call, you know, your ujiha, your fire, your family. You know, that fire gets up in you and you can feel that, you know, and you get sort of, get this experience from it. When you feel that, as a person who's learning this, I think you feel that inspiration to want to return to the older mind. And we're not thinking older mind like, hey, we're talking about my people that lived 100 years ago. No, we're talking about before colonization. We're talking about the original ways that our men, our women, our elders, our children were seen and honored and protected and safeguarded and, you know, just taken care of. You know, and we don't have those things today. And returning to those principles will help eradicate these problems that we have, because people will see their responsibilities, they will honor their obligations, they will understand where they need to hold themselves, their families and the public and legislators accountable for their failures to see this as what it is and to make justice of it. You know, that's the biggest part, is justice. You know, decolonization, decolonizing is about forms of justice and healing, finding peace. Most Native people today, indigenous peoples all across Turtle Island, are in some form or some network of complicated traumas, both socially, physically, emotionally, culturally, economically, environmentally, all those things. And decolonizing can help us get away from those things, those that adversity, those traumas. They can help restore our peace of mind. They can help restore our confidence. They can help restore our ability to work together, our ability to problem solve, our ability to reconcile issues in our own tribal governance without interference from the settler estate. In that context, you know, we would like to discuss what the Tuscarora were doing before Europeans arrived. You know, a lot of people don't see or hear that. There's a lot in what John Lawson puts together, you know, that we see as the Surveyor General of the Carolinas. And he has this long, list of Tuscarora words, and he talks about Tuscarora cultural traditions when we were at funerals and rites of passages and at different times of the seasons. And he gives all this very, very intricate data and details of living amongst the Tuscarora. So, you know, those are things that we can use and highlight and say, well, this is what we know the Tuscarora were doing while we were still keeping our traditions intact as we were starting to deal with the dilemma of the colonial contact, the period of the Tuscarora Wars. There are many different maps before John Lawson came around that shows where the Tuscarora may or may not have been in these regions of Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina. And then there's also the bigger crux of, you know, this Bering Strait theory with, you know, indigenous people, Native Americans, American Indians coming across this small ice-free corridor, you know, corridor for so long. And then dealing with these scientific approaches, right, of where we came from biologically, scientifically, DNA-related migrations, et cetera. And so really we're going into a lot of that detail on, for instance, we know when the Tuscarora were in place in North Carolina permanently. And we know because there's data out there that tells us these things. There's language differentiation when we broke off from the main body of the Iroquois-speaking peoples, such as the Seneca, Onondaga, Cayuga, Mohawk, Seneca, and others like Cherokee. And then there are other things like when we were using those words and what we were doing in our culture, right? When we were growing corn, when we were growing beans, when we were using clay pipes and vessels to store things, to do agriculture. And we know that we were sedentary at the time that we were doing more agricultural and industrial complexes, which as was at a certain period of time, the late woodland period. And so, you know, we get this stronger access to information over our research. And these are things that we would love to share with our audiences, is this greater understanding, this more prolific full picture of the Tuscarora. Mm-hmm. When we migrated, when we arrived, you know, there's a lot of contention with historians, of most time non-Native, who have no contact or communication with the Tuscarora that are making up the people and communities we're talking about that have always been here, always been representing themselves, always been documented as Tuscarora. And most times they're missing a lot of meat and bones to that full picture. And we understand they can only share so much in a book, in a novel, in an article, in a news article, whatever. But, you know, there's a lot of bias. There's a lot of preconceived stereotypes. There's a lot of fantasy and illusions tied up in some of those things. And some of them are just outright fraudulent, based upon someone wanting to sell a book and just make a dollar. And so, you know, we're offering this free, but the point of it is that you're getting the authentic narrative. And so building upon, say, that first set, that first lecture, before and after contact, it's all about how the Tuscarora organized themselves, how we were spiritually, culturally put together and all of those things, political alliances with other folks and people and our neighbors, and then sort of really getting into the contact period and how things sort of start to change and what the real deal and relationship was at the initial standpoint of, say, for instance, the Tuscarora and the Spanish, the Tuscarora and the English. We know there wasn't much with the Tuscarora and the French, so mainly those two parties. And those are the things we'll discuss in that first part to get people's minds wrapped around, you know, as they're going through this historical chronicle cultural perspective of Tuscaroras in our legacy here from that time to this time, that they're going to get layers of these things, you know, added on so that they can see more of a fuller picture.
That is fascinating. And so let's go on to Tuscarora land and treaties. Well, we've heard some great things about that. And in this series, it sounds like this might be one of the bedrock issues, right?
Right. There's a lot of documentation about it because a lot of it is, you know, really connected to the Tuscarora War time period. A lot of it sort of has to do, too, with the first lecture and building on from that, right? So at this point, we'll be talking about, you know, Tuscarora land claims, Tuscarora Aboriginal land claims, the treaty claims, and then just generally where the Tuscarora are today, you know, sort of where you can find Tuscarora land at. So when you look up, say, Wake County, you know, you look up Johnston County, you look up, you know, you can look up Camden County, you can look up all these different counties, Bertie, Edgecombe, Halifax, you know, all these different eastern coastal counties, central counties in North Carolina. And through their own history, you can see a Tuscarora presence in the historical past, in the colonial past. Some of them will state there's a connection with living Tuscarora there today. That's less than the former. But the point there is, you know, we'll be showing clearly where Tuscaroras have been at with land claims, where those counties themselves have come forward and honored that narrative and said, yeah, well, we had Tuscaroras here back in time. Today, you know, we have what we have, but in the past, on these lands, we had Tuscaroras and Tuscaroras alone. And so we want to highlight, you know, all of this interchange between where we can find Tuscarora relationships with land. You know, for instance, we talk about rivers. We talk about how our families, you know, pushed up into these estuaries, estuarine territories. And so we can look at the Cape Fear River. We can look at the Neuse River, the Tar, the Pamlico, and the Roanoke. And then we see that these areas were absolutely where our people were at. You know, there's a lot of historical documentation, archaeological documentation that confirms Tuscarora occupation in those areas. And so we like to capitalize on that, show the rivers that our people ancestrally inhabited, because we would have pushed and occupied permanently and temporarily in different seasons and different times these lands for hundreds of acres and miles across these rivers. And so, you know, people don't think today when they hear Tuscarora, they don't think that the Tuscarora ever lived as far south as the Cape Fear River. But in reality, there's so much documentation that proves it. It's just not even funny. Like, it's just not even funny. You know, from the historical time to the present, you know, for instance, there were a treaty with Colonel John Barnwell from South Carolina with his militia, mostly composed of Indian enemies that had always fought the Tuscarora for centuries. And so, one, they don't realize that the majority of the force that they brought with them to fight the Tuscarora were natives and not non-natives. They were basically officers in uniform who were white militiamen, but they were absolutely low in number. It was the enemies of the Tuscarora that came in high number, because they told them, if you come and fight the Tuscarora, you can have as many slaves as you can capture and sell at our slave chattels there in Charlestown, as well as have Tuscarora land. So when Colonel Barnwell came and he fought the Southern Tuscarora, who were the hostile party that had attacked and killed some settlers in so many hours strategically, and, you know, Colonel Barnwell, one of his things on his treaty with the Tuscarora, which North Carolina does not count this treaty, Virginia does not count this treaty, and it really was not ratified by both parties in an official capacity. So this was more of a military truce in the heat of battle. And that truce was broken by Barnwell much later. But the meat and bones, the real specific important part of that is that he was asking the Tuscarora, or requiring of the Hancock's Tuscaroras and his allies, to give up claim to the land between the Cape Fear and the Neuse River. And so here we have, in the earliest of military truces between the Tuscarora and hostile parties, them requiring or asking, attempting to get the Tuscarora to give up that land claim. So here's the issue. If the Tuscarora had never been lived anywhere near the Cape Fear, why was a South Carolina militiaman, colonel, and his Indian allies, who had been enemies of the Tuscarora for centuries, want access to that land? because we lived there, because we traded there, because we hunted there. All these things were very much true, and historically, it has been dissolved into an illusion, because today we know that the Lumbee tribe claims Cumberland County, and the state and federal government allows them to claim that territory, when in reality, that land has always belonged to the Tuscarora, has been unceded territory. So this is part of what we want people to realize, is that the government has never told the truth. You know, they've only told the truth when they've been caught basically red-handed in the act of attempting to erase our people and our claims. So, you know, documentation is there, and we'd like people to understand that we have the ability to prove these things head over heels. There's a lot of newspapers and periodicals throughout, you know, the early 1800s to the modern time that still talk about and clarify that Tuscarora presence could be felt from as far south as the Cape Fear River to as far north as the Chesapeake Bay. So we just like to honor our ancestors' experience of where they've lived, of what land they've claimed, and what land we had aboriginally before there was warfare with Europeans, before they encroached on our property, etc. Most people have no idea that the Tuscarora placed the whites on a reservation in the last quarter of the 17th century. So historians such as Thomas Paramore wrote in the 80s, that the Tuscarora had already had earlier skirmishes with the Chowan River, Virginia settlers coming out of Jamestown. And the thing is, they were coming south and west out of Virginia into Chowan territory, which they defeated the Chowanoke Indians, put them on a reservation. Because of that, the Tuscarora immediately claimed by proxy the land the Chowanoke had surrendered. Because to the Tuscarora ancestors, the Chowanoke were our nearest neighbor and one of our competitors. And so if they were subdued, that land in our law became ours. The colonists said it was theirs because there was a treaty in this reservation. But us, our people, Tuscaroras, saw that land now as ours. And so because the Chowanoke Virginia settlers defeated the Chowanoke and the Yalpum, put them on reservations, whatever, they thought that they, you know, would be able to do the Tuscarora the same way. And so they came out of that area. They came west of the Chowan River, and the Tuscarora fought back. And there's a lot of this little hit-and-miss documentation that you can find that talks about this earlier skirmish and how there was a truce. And at that truce, the Tuscarora essentially placed or agreed to allow those Virginia Chowan settlers who had then been defeated by the Tuscarora to live on Chowan land. And we told them, that's now your boundary, do not come west of this river. And so eventually you have the Tuscarora Wars where John Lawson is coming around. There's a lot more smallpox in these different phases of colonial history. And then the Tuscarora are not so perfectly built to withstand this conflict with Europeans at that time. So we like to be very intricate and critical with our detail findings. That, you know, this thing about where the Tuscarora have been, what land we've claimed, where our ancestors have lived and be buried, is a very long legacy. There are so many places that our ancestors are still buried, that are being dug up, that are being removed, where artifacts are being found and are being destroyed, being put on private collection, being sold, being held by military installations, and then not be honored, not be repatriated, not even be acknowledged as Tuscarora, but as something different. Or nothing at all. And so, you know, we can't tell everything in these moments through these virtual series, but we're absolutely opening the door to a lot of concentrated knowledge that we have absolutely reviewed, filtered, cross-analyzed, evaluated, and you know, placed amongst a peer review process of looking and making sure that we can verify these things through the process.
I'm so excited also that Tuscarora language and culture will be part of this series. And we only have a few minutes left, but I want to make sure that you and I discuss that.
Yes, absolutely. So Runa Kwacha has been, you know, a blessing to the nation and many others that have, you know, taken their time to sacrifice whatever else they could be doing with their careers and their lives and actually taking the time to learn this, get immersed in it. You know, and be able to breathe it back to the people with the time and process and patience to actually teach it. And Runa Kwacha has that in spades. No matter what age you are, elder, child, you know, adult that's working a job, you know, he has the ability to teach it all in the language to us. And I'm very grateful for that. And through that, you know, it's going to be a process of interpreting just basics of fundamentals, right? Like what we talked about, you know, Donnie Giasse, Donnie I Am Called. So it's not my name is Donnie, you know, it's Donnie I Am Called. So that's different in the perspective to what I'm saying in English, right, to what I'm saying in Tuscarora. So it shows clearly, immediately, that there's not always some easy English translation to the Tuscarora language and to any native language, you know, or any other language in particular. So it really sets up this standard that, you know, understanding the Tuscarora language changes fundamentally your mind. And so seeing the culture becomes easier. Like when we start learning, you know, the conjugations for the languages. When I'm saying you or I. So if I'm saying, you know, my father, that's ring-ent. Ring-ent, my father. So I'm saying your father, that would be sa-ring-ent, sa-ring-ent. The sa, the theta there, that lets you know that it's a pronoun, that I'm talking about you and your father. And when I say that, although the R is in the front, that R is a masculine identifier, letting you know that that's my father. Okay? And so those are just ways that we can, you know, identify these things as being common. And you hear that ent part at the end, that's letting you know this has something to do with father, something to do with a male figure that is, you know, in charge here, is in being respected here as a role model, as a figure in the family. So, yeah, Runa Kwache, he has a lot more than I, and I'm still learning. So I have the ability, of course, to introduce myself. I can tell you certain things about colors, how the weather is. So the weather is hot. The weather is hot. You know, these are things that when we say them, it's much different than what you're going to get in English sometimes. So it may not translate the exact way you're thinking. For instance, genorikwa. Genorikwa, so I love you, really means you are precious to me. So we think when we hear that, we generalize it back to English and we say, I love you. But in reality, when we're told it in the language, it's you are precious to me.
Yes.
So it shows a very different meaning than just, I love you. I love you.
Right.
You know, I love you. But what does love mean? What does love mean? You know, so it has an act. There's an actual act there, a physical act that's going on in that word, a process. It's not just me saying something. I'm doing something. You are precious to me. So those things are saying, I care about you. You know, I'll protect you. You know, I will honor you, these things, when you say that. You know, and so that doesn't always come across in every language, in every community, in every culture as that particular thing, right? And so these are just small things that I can say that I've learned from Runa Kwache that I know are small examples, you know, of what will be shared. Of course, he will be more of the lead on that, and I'll be more of coming in to supplement, you know, things like what John Lawson said and what we were doing at our times culturally and what we're doing now and how we're not doing all those things, how De Graffenried, who was the Swiss nobleman that came with John Lawson, how he saw this post outside in some of our villages with certain masked figures and how he was just scared to death of them and thought it was desecration of Christianity, and he mutilated and destroyed those masks, which were, you know, cultural Tuscarora artifacts and you know, parts of our active culture. So the things that he didn't understand, you know, and we don't understand them as much anymore today because of assimilating and indoctrinating, becoming Christian. But these are the things, you know, we'll discuss as far as how we've come, you know, how we've gone back to revitalize parts of our culture, like longhouse and dances and songs and language, and then how some things like the religious parts and the cosmology is worlds apart, you know, and we have a hard time trying to live in two worlds because our traditional timekeeping, right, 13 moons and 13 cycles and the 12-month Gregorian calendar, you know, those are two separate things, two different ways of living. And so our people have to make choices of culturally living within our own time. We're living with this modern progression, and you can't really live, you know, essentially in those two things simultaneously.
Amazing. And there'll also be Tuscarora migrations and genealogy, and all you have to do to be part of this is go to wake.gov/libraries. That's all you have to do. Register for these sessions. Bring your friends. Share on social media. This is the kind of content we always say we want. Representation matters. Thank you for taking the time to join us today.
Jadisna and Yahweh. Thank God. You're welcome, and thank you very much. I appreciate being here. It was a blessing, and anytime you need me in the future, I'll be happy, more than happy, to come back.
I'm already looking forward to it. I'm already looking forward to our conversation. That's wonderful. Thank you to all of you who sponsor, who donate, who share, to all the platforms, to all the friends, to all the listeners. We love each and every one of you, and we appreciate you. I'm Dr. Dawn Karima, and we'll see you next time.
You've got the power. The world's greatest radio. TalkTainmentRadio.com.